Good morning and welcome to Jonesy, the show that brings you conversations with some of the most interesting people in the world of books, podcasts, radio, theater, music, and humor, guaranteed to entertain and enlighten. I'm the host of Jonesy, Ken Jones, no relation by the way. We have a few annual traditions here on Jonesy, ones I look forward to every year, our Portland Book Festival preview with director Amanda Bullock, the Portland Youth Philharmonic season opener with musical director David Hattner, and the Waterfront Blues Festival preview with virtuoso guitarist and songwriter Ty Curtis. Well, the 36th Waterfront Blues Festival is right around the corner, ready to fill Portland's Waterfront Park with 4 days of great live music from July 1st through the 4th. The schedule includes headliners Buddy Guy, The Mavericks, Los Lonely Boys, J.J. Gray and Mofro, Shamika Copeland and Corey Wong, as well as an all-star lineup of established and up-and-coming acts representing a variety of musical styles. There's truly something for everyone. If you can't be there in person, no worries. In another long-standing tradition, KBOO has you covered. We'll be live streaming the entire run as we do every Blues Fest from noon to 10 p.m. each day. To preview the festival, I'm grateful to welcome Ty Curtis back to the KBOO studios, along with his bandmate, Richard Lawrence. The Ty Curtis Band will be performing on the South Stage on Tuesday, July 4th at 1 p.m., and we're fortunate to also have the man behind all those great Waterfront Blues Festival acts, the festival's artistic director, Peter Damon, and a pretty good guitar player himself. Peter, welcome.
Hi. Good to be here.
Well, Peter, before we get to the festival itself, first a little background. Yeah. Like Ty and Rich, you also started young. You grew up in the Chicago area and fell in love with blues music during that time. When did you start playing guitar, and who were your early influences? Man, that was some of the best music in the country at the time.
Well, I started playing guitar when I was about 12, I think. In 7th and 8th grade, I was in this kind of, a rock band. I had a garage band.
Oh, you told me you were playing Monkees covers.
Yeah, we were playing Monkees covers, and then we sort of graduated to, like, Stones, early Stones, and Animals covers, and when I was a freshman in high school, we heard there was a free concert down in Grant Park in Chicago. And we heard there was this, I thought it was the name of a Southern rock band called Muddy Waters. So we thought, all right, let's go down to this free concert in Grant Park. So we took the L down and we walked into Grant Park, I think just as Coco Taylor hit the stage.
Wow.
It was the first Grant Park Blues Festival, which was the precursor of the Chicago Blues Festival today. And in one afternoon, we saw everybody from Otis Rush and Coco Taylor and Johnny Littlejohn and Victoria Spivey and Luther Allison and Buddy Guy and Junior Wells and pretty much everybody who was alive. Oh, Muddy Waters also. On the Chicago blues scene at that time. This was in 69.
And you realized that Muddy Waters was not a Southern.
Yeah, I discovered Muddy Waters there. Otis Spann was there, his pianist. It was an amazing, kind of life-altering experience for all of us. We went back to the suburbs that we had come from, and we turned into a blues band, like, the next day. And we started figuring out how to bring acts like Coco Taylor and Otis Rush up to our high school dances, which was really a radical concept in this very white suburb that I had grown up in.
You and the band were the only blues fans that you knew there at high school?
Yeah, but we changed a lot of minds about that. I mean, we people that I went to school with back in those days still talk about some of those experiences, you know, seeing Otis Rush in our high school cafeteria and Coco Taylor. It was amazing. We started going down to Maxwell Street on Sunday afternoons. Maxwell Street was like Saturday Market here, except it was in the hood in Chicago. It was like in this neighborhood just west of the Loop that was Afro-American, Puerto Rican, Eastern European, sort of these different neighborhoods all kind of collided. And there was this big market, a free market that happened down there. And people would be selling basically things that they had been ripping off from freight cars and things like that. They would have a card table with hairspray or blank 8-track tapes or brand new washer dryers that they had gotten out of a freight car or something like that. It was this amazing scene on the west side of Chicago. And on every street corner, there would be a power cord that would come out of a window. And at the bottom of a power cord, there'd be like a couple of guitar amps, and there'd be a little band playing, a little blues band playing. So we would start going down there on Sundays and sitting in with some of those Maxwell Street blues bands. Maxwell Street was where most of the Chicago blues guys first went after they came up from Mississippi in the Delta.
You were sitting in with some great musicians there.
Yeah, they were sort of under the radar guys. I mean, they weren't people you've really ever heard of. There was this one guy I got to play with a few times named Big John Rencher, who was a blind, one-armed harmonica player who's, you know, I think he recorded a couple of kind of obscure tracks. Nobody really knows who he is except harmonica players. So he was really a pretty amazing harmonica player, but yeah, anyway, and so we'd play with some of those guys, and they would say, oh, come on down to Turner's Lounge with us on South, 3000 South Indiana Avenue, and we'd go down to these clubs and sit in, and it's really an amazing, really amazing experience. But I have to say that afternoon at the Grand Park Blues Festival, you know, I didn't really totally understand it at the time, but it was the thing that kind of derailed my life into the little, alley that I'm in now. I wouldn't be doing this today if I hadn't kind of just happened on this free blues festival down in Chicago.
Now, let's skip ahead a little. Yeah. How did you join up with the Paul DeLay Blues Band? You were there for over 15 years, and I read you also managed the band at a certain point.
Yeah, I was basically the guy that booked the gigs and figured out how to get from point A to point B.
So you've been both an artist, a musician, but also artistic director.
Yeah.
Even though you didn't know it at the time.
Yeah, I didn't know it at the time. I came to Portland to work for Willamette Week. I was a writer for Willamette Week for 3 or 4 years.
Music writer?
No, I was actually, I did a lot of the Bhagwan coverage. I did a lot of exposés.
Yes.
I spent 2 nights in Ma Anand Sheila's guest room, with Ron Buell, the publisher of Willamette Week in those days. We spent a couple of days out in Rajneeshpuram, like 3 weeks after they had landed here, while they were still living in trailers and things like that. So I did a lot of political writing. I really didn't do music writing. I was like a serious journalist. So about 4 or 5 years into my journalism thing in Portland, I was freelancing for the Oregonian's Sunday Magazine. They had a really great Sunday magazine in those days. And I was doing an article on the Northwest blues scene that had produced Robert Cray. And the article was sort of, what was the scene that he came out of? How did he manage to, basically win a Grammy from the Northwest as a blues guy? So I was interviewing a lot of other musicians in the scene, one of which was the Paul DeLay Band. Paul DeLay Band was at a gig at the Last Hurrah downtown on their regular Monday night gig, and they were having auditions for a new guitarist. Their prior guitarist had split, was kind of going into rehab. And anyway, I did the interview, and after the interview, I said, well, I grew up in Chicago playing in this high school blues band. I'm going to go home and get my guitar, and I would like to audition just for the hell of it. And they kind of rolled their eyes and kind of went, oh my God.
Here's this journalist.
The journalist is going to sit in with us. And they said, well, okay, maybe the last number. So I sat in the last number, and Paul and I just immediately had this bond. He knew that I knew exactly what was supposed to happen.
Were you kind of amazed at that? It's something you don't really know in advance, right? Just meeting Paul.
No, well, I knew that musically we would connect, because I knew that I knew how to play this music. I was really into it. I hadn't been in it really in a band for kind of a long time, but so I went on the road with the band that weekend. They said, "Okay, we've got a gig in Ashland for 4 nights. You want to come down?" And I was like, "Yeah." No, that was my first, was a four-night stand.
And stayed with, 15 more years
yeah,
or so.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember, you know, my parents were like, "You're doing what? Is that why we send you to college to go join a band?" It's, "Mom, I'm just going to do it for like, you know, a month maybe. Just get it out of my system. It's cool." You know, that was 30 plus years ago.
You got hooked.
I got hooked. And, you know, ironically, I discovered that playing in a blues band was actually going to be a more stable career path
than journalism.
Than journalism.
Yes.
I mean, you know, who would have thought? Anyway.
So how'd you go from there to artistic director?
Okay, so
Festival?
I was playing in the Paul DeLay band for a year or two, and meanwhile playing at Waterfront, in the early version of the Waterfront, which was the Rose City Blues Festival.
And that was around 1988 or so?
Yeah. And at some point, the guy who had been the first curator, Dave Klingon, got a job in the upper levels of the Oregon Food Bank as like in the development wing. And they needed a new artistic director for the festival. So I got this call and they offered me, but they called me because they knew that I knew how to write press releases.
Ah, the journalism comes in.
The journalism. And also because I had an early generation Macintosh computer. I had a Mac 512K, not even a Mac Plus. It was a half of a megabyte computer. And they knew that I knew how to put together, you know, page layout stuff on the Mac. So that's really was at least half the reason I got the call.
Do you remember that first blues festival you booked? Some of the artists and maybe some of the lessons learned?
Yeah. But before I turned the gig down like three times before I finally said, okay, what the heck, I'll try it.
Oh, they were after you.
They really were, because they thought, well, he knows the music. He knows how to write press releases. This would be the guy for the job. And I was like, I'm not the guy for the job. I don't want to do this. It's just going to be a lot of headaches. All the bands that don't get to play the festival will be pissed off at me. And, you know, I don't need that kind of stress in my, but anyway. So that third time I said, okay, I'll try it. So anyway, here I still am. Yeah. The first year, I should have looked some of this stuff up.
Well, that was 1994, I think, when you were first named.
I know that the first guy that I tried to get on the festival was Luther Allison. And I spent, you know, I made a lot of phone calls trying to find out where was Luther Allison. Luther Allison was one of the young up-and-coming blues guys when I was in high school. And I saw him play a bunch of times, and I really dug him. And a lot of people just didn't know where he was.
And pre-internet, so it was
It's hard to find. No, there weren't any agents that were like representing him or anything like that. And so I've just found out that he'd been living in Paris for a few years. And I finally found this sort of agent up in Minneapolis who kind of knew him and said, "Well, I can't get him over here this year, but we're going to bring him back next year. He's going to make a reemerge in the States." And he had been kind of a brilliant guitarist and singer, but he'd also just been a really heavy drinker, and he always been was when you went to see him, the last set was always kind of just wild and insane, you know. So he had gone to France to kind of dry out and get his life together, and anyway, he came back. Not the first year I did Waterfront, but the next year, and it really, to this day, it was like probably the greatest Chicago blues set I've seen at Waterfront, or almost anywhere. I mean, it just was riveting and just
everything's been downhill after that. After Luther Allison, I'm just kidding. Because
I don't know if Robert Plant was exactly downhill.
Buddy Guy, a number of others,
but.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to ask about the headliners.
Yeah.
Now, you book a who's who, in addition to, we mentioned Buddy Guy, Luther Allison, Robert Plant, Greg Allman one year, Lucinda Williams, Steve Miller, Curtis Elgato several years. Buddy Guy, I should mention, is returning to the main stage again this year on July 3rd, Monday, July 3rd. Other than Luther Allison and tracking him down in France, how do you book the big names now? Must be a balancing act of scheduling and budget.
It's scheduling and budget. It's also routing. I mean, I tried to get Greg Allman here for years, and he just was never coming through the Northwest in July, if at all. It would be always be like, well, he's thinking of coming through in September, maybe. But there are long stretches of time where Allman never made it out this far. He just kind of didn't route that often through here. And finally, things lined up, and it's like, okay, we're coming out. We're gonna finally get out there this year.
And something happened, though.
Yeah, he called in sick. He called in sick that first year.
I remember that. But he did vow to return.
Yeah, and he did. And he not only that, he gave us a screaming deal. I mean, you know.
Oh, in terms of
The pricing and stuff.
Well, as a fan and a listener in the audience, he also gave us a screaming deal in terms of the performance. It was just incredible. And
yeah.
Did he die like a year or two after that?
Excellent. It was about a year later, I think, or maybe a year or two.
True to his word.
Yeah. That was a great band he had with him, too. I mean, those were just... And actually, there was a horn player, oh, God, no, I can't remember his name, who was from Portland, who played in his band. I'm just drawing a blank.
Well, let's talk about the people who aren't the headliners. And every year I go, I always discover several acts that I've never heard of before, but just blow me away. How do you find people like that? When you scout out, do you travel a lot? Do you go to a lot of festivals? You must have contacts all over the country.
Yeah, I mean, you know, before the pandemic sort of changed our lives and my life, I went to a lot of festivals in the fall when things sort of slowed down with Waterfront. I would go to the King Biscuit Blues Festival in Arkansas. I'd go down to the New Orleans Jazz Heritage Festival and the French Quarter Festival. And
I know you've been in Clarksdale several times.
Yeah. Clarksdale is kind of across the river from
the Arkansas,
The Arkansas Festival happens. So I found a lot of acts just going out seeing them at these festivals. And then when they routed through Portland, if they came through Portland, I spent a lot of time just going out to see shows and dropping in.
And what's the criteria that you look for? Performance, material.
Yeah. Well, if one kind of act you're looking to pull crowds. The headliners need to be people that a lot of Portland knows about or might have heard about and are interested to come to see.
The Buddy Guys of
the world. The Buddy Guys of the world, yeah. Or the Greg Allmans. Once we have the crowd there, we can throw anything at them that's good, you know. And that's what's exciting about the festival to me, is to turn on people to these unknown acts.
Right, Comfort Buddy Guy, you know. Discover
yeah.
X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, and, you know, some of the unknown acts that we brought have gone on to big things.
I remember Kingfish.
This is a Buddy Guy story, too. I mean, I met Kingfish when I was in Clarksdale. He was playing bass. He was 11 years old. He was playing bass.
My wife and I were there a few years after, and all we heard was about Kingfish. We actually have a CD put out by the Rock and Roll Museum there.
Yeah, yeah,
the
right,
museum.
Right, right.
Kingfish was in the museum band.
Yeah,
playing
that's
bass.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So Stan Street has this gallery down there and a performance.
Cathead, right?
Cathead, yeah. And he said, I have this... this band playing this street party. You wanna play guitar? And I said, yeah, sure, okay. So Kingfish was playing bass. He was 11 years old, and he was a good bass player. And I said, yeah, Stan, that guy's pretty good on bass. He said, oh man, you should hear him play guitar. And I was like, yeah, whatever. I mean, I've heard all the great guitars. Yeah, another prodigy guitar guy. So every time I'd go back to Clarksdale, I kind of bumped. See him, you know, and I sat in with him at Red's Juke Joint one night.
I remember Red's.
Yeah. So at some point, maybe in 2015, I went down with some friends from up here to convince his mom to let him come to Portland.
Princess,
yeah. To convince Princess to let us bring up Kingfish. So we brought Kingfish up, And I put this really great band with Tony Coleman on drums, B.B. King's longtime drummer, Jim Pugh, my old high school bandmate who had played with Etta James and Robert Cray for years on keys, John Mazzocco, former John Lee Hooker guy on bass. And Kingfish, sort of in this unrehearsed set with them, just knocked it out of the park. I mean, it was just brilliant. It was spine tingling. It just like totally.
I think we were there for that, my
yeah,
wife and I.
And it wasn't just his guitar chops, because I, you know, I've seen guitar chops. I mean, I know guitar chops. I can play a lot of them. I have a lot, some of those chops, you know. It was, he was just such a deep performer. So, and his voice, you know, this little, I mean, this teenager had this voice like Albert King. I mean, it was just this big, booming voice. And he had this incredible command of the band. I mean, he could kind of turn around and get them to drop the dynamics, you know, instantly. He just knew how to lead a band. He was like, I think maybe 16 or 17 at
just
that point.
Incredible. He's not much older now.
Yeah. I mean, he's just barely 21 at this point.
Yeah, I noticed he's not playing this year, but
we tried.
Him for Winthrop, though.
Yeah, he's playing Winthrop.
Uh-huh.
His routing didn't work out. So Kingfish played like on the one of the first days of the festival, and he was supposed to go back the next day to Mississippi. And we said, okay, we've got to figure out how to keep him around until the last night when Buddy Guy is headlining, and maybe we can connect them. You know, we really felt we were on this mission to introduce Buddy Guy to Kingfish. So we changed the flight plan and paid the extra fees and all that kind of stuff. And we got Tony Coleman, who was who's known Buddy Guy for years, really lobbied Buddy hard. You got to check this kid out. Bring him up to sit in for a tune if he can. And it was like, oh, okay. So, but, you know, Buddy did that, and Kingfish got up there with Buddy and Quinn Sullivan, and it was just this amazing finale to the festival that year.
And now he's opening act for a lot stops on Buddy Guy's farewell
tour. That's right. And Buddy ended up, because of that meeting, Buddy produced his first record, which was nominated for a Grammy. Kingfish, I think his second album that just won a Grammy. Yeah, Kingfish is off and running. And, you know, I think Waterfront had something to do with helping him get there. He would have gotten there anyway, I'm sure. But
it was the first time we saw him play. Now, yeah. We heard of him when we were in Clarksdale, but we didn't see him until the Waterfront Blues Festival.
But that was really the first, definitely was his first West Coast. It was probably the first, might have been the first time he's been on a plane.
And now he's an international star.
Now he's an international
playing jazz
star.
Festivals in France.
Yeah. And he's a great kid. I really like him.
The princess did a good job raising him.
Yeah.
Do you have any artists, Peter, on your bucket list? Maybe ones you tried and couldn't get because of either routing or budget?
Well, one I've been trying, and this is another story of like you saw him at Waterfront first, which is Gary Clark.
Oh, yes.
Gary Clark.
Oh, a big name now.
So years ago, we used to bring this horn section from Austin called the Texas Horns to like back up a lot of different acts. And the saxophone player at some point said, you really got to check out this guy, Gary Clark. You know, he's like 16 years old, lives in Austin. Here's his mom's phone number. So I called his mom the next year and said, hey, we want to get Gary up here. So, you know, I think for like $500 and a plane ticket, Gary Clark came up and spent the whole weekend playing on the boat, playing on the workshop stage.
So that's the Blues Cruise.
Yeah. Yeah. Playing, you know, sitting in with Band X and Band Y, and just kind of, he was like the mascot of the festival in some ways. I mean, nobody knew who he was, but he was just hanging around. So by, you know, the next year he was like already started taking off, and he was playing big rock festivals in Bonnaroo a few years after that. So I've been trying to get him back here really since then. That was like 10, maybe 15 years ago.
But you have a relationship, so when things work out, I'm sure he'll return.
It may. It
oh,
may.
Who knows? Maybe I'm too optimistic.
He's a big, he's
love
a big
to see
deal
him again.
Now, you know?
Right.
Well, and also for the initial part of his trajectory is he wouldn't play blues festivals. He didn't want to be identified as a blues
kind of stereotype as a blues musician.
Yeah, he wanted to play Bonnaroo and Coachella and stuff. He didn't want to play other blues festivals necessarily. So we've made offers on him. They just haven't worked out. We made one this year and last year. We'll get him back here one of these days. Trombone Shorty is another guy who...
We saw him at the Blues Festival.
Yeah, this is his first... He was just out of high school when he played Waterfront for the first time.
All these music prodigies.
And a lot of Shorty's high school band are still touring with him today. The guitar players and bass player.
And he went to high school in New Orleans?
Yeah, it was this arts academy called NOCA.
I could see that talented class.
Yeah, very talented. All those guys were great. But anyway, his first West Coast public appearance was at Waterfront.
So, Ty, let's go to you. When we previewed last year's Waterfront Blues Fest, you, Rich, and band were hard at work on a new album. Actually, two new albums. The first, Ascendant Blues, was just released last month. That's a lot of material to offer. So you were pretty busy during the pandemic while the rest of us were kind of sheltering in place. You were writing a lot of songs?
Yeah, that's correct. I was living in Texas, I was living out by a lake and just really conducive spot to do songwriting. And that's how I get all my emotions out, and I just have a book of them.
And I remember last year when you were so excited about the recording sessions. They were at Portland's Hallowed Hall Studios, not far from here. And you, in addition to Rich, you had a great group of musicians playing there, including Dave Call, who, by the way, you probably know this, but he actually played with Peter in the Paul DeLay band going back 20 years. What's it like playing with kind of a guy with that history of the blues and that mastery of the instrument like Dave?
Yeah, he's as solid as a rock. I just really don't have to worry about the bass. Maybe we'll go over a few things initially, but he really just kind of finds the right places to be in the song to add that really nice low hertz that he does. Yeah.
And Rich, was that true of you also? You guys are the rhythm section, so did you lock in with Dave like right away? And
yeah, we had a good chance to. Good thing about it was we had a lot of rehearsal time before going into the studio, and we had a lot of time to just really lock in. But just alongside of the rehearsals, we've played a lot of gigs, and our chemistry kind of locked in from playing different shows. And it was seamless. I mean, me and Dave, we gel well together. We play very well together. I play off of him, not only his skill, but his energy as well. So,
I like how you in the Ty Curtis band, both of you are kind of extending the legacy of Pacific Northwest Blues from the Paul DeLay band now up to 2023, with Dave as that common denominator.
Yeah. that's not a light statement at all. So, I mean,
you guys can handle it. I've heard you many times.
Thank you.
Now, in terms of this year's Blues Fest, I asked you last year, too, about acts that you were looking forward to, especially the ones with drummers you respect. Anybody this year, have you looked at the lineup?
Yeah, I had a chance to look at the lineup. Lost Lonely Boys is one of my favorite bands, so I'm excited to hear those guys. I haven't heard them live yet. So Nick West, I'm not sure who she's bringing on drums, but Nick West is a phenomenal bass player. She's played with Prince and lots of other bands, but she's phenomenal. She told a really cool story about playing in front of Prince for the first time. So I'm excited to hear her play, and I'm excited to see what band she's going to bring, especially the drummer, of course. I know.
I'd like to hear that story at the Blues Fest when she performs.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Well, it's one thing to talk about the new songs and all this material, but nothing like hearing them performed live. I wonder if you guys can give us a sample. Ty, you said you're going to play Hey Now, which was released as a single last year and is on the new album, Ascendant Blues.
That's right. I brought my childhood guitar in that I wrote, I did my first song on, and started out with a 2-chord song and ended up turning this guitar into a slide guitar. It's a one-trick pony, as we were talking about, but it does its thing really well.
By looking at it, and I'm sorry we don't have the video camera in here, you'd never expect the sounds that Ty brings out of it to come out of that piece of wood and a few strings there.
Yeah, it's like a kid's toy Western guitar.
It just doesn't sound like a kid.
But I put a DeArmond pickup in it in tribute to Roy Rogers with his style, how he has a Martin D18 with a DeArmond pickup. I just thought it would be cool to take my childhood guitar and make it live. All right, this will be the acoustified version of Hey Now.
It's all right, I tell you when I'm coming to your bedside. Yeah, I take too long, just hum along and pray to the sweet song. Hey now, you'll be just fine, keep your feet moving till the daylight. This ground, there never come a day where we'll be found. Oh yeah. Sunshine, now it's coming gone. We'll move along with life and we'll be strong. Be
That was so good, and again, unbelievable what's coming out of that guitar. And that's from the new album, Ascendant Blues. Ty and the band will be performing at the Waterfront Blues Festival on Tuesday, July 4th at 1. Ty, the album will be available there, right, at the Music Millennium booth, and you and Rich will be signing the CDs.
Yep. Great.
And I know you have a pretty busy summer planned in addition to the Blues Fest. Where can people find out more about the new album and all your upcoming shows?
At tycurtis.net.
And Rich, do you have some projects other than playing with Ty in the band this summer you'd like to talk about?
I've been writing with a few friends of mine about some new stuff here. The thing about me is I've been kind of dibbling and dabbling in different genres. So right now, of course, with Ty, with the blues and rock stuff and some of the singer-songwriter stuff, I'm just arranging the music, well, helping arrange, but Ty has written all of the music, and it's phenomenal, as you can tell. Some of the other projects are, some of it's gospel, some of it's blues, some of it's R&B, right now I'm in a creative space where I didn't think I'd get here. I didn't think I'd get to songwriting or producing, but I'm here now, and it's been pretty good. Yeah, it's been pretty good so far.
Do you plan maybe your own record when you get enough material to get enough songs?
Yeah, my first record. It's been a long process. I already have the title. I have the artwork. I have the subject matter. Most of it will be instrumental, but the vibe of the album, I already have the idea. But now it's just about writing the material. And getting drawn inspiration from life and things I've been through in the last 4 or 5 years. So,
which is what songwriters do. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's cool. The album cover was actually drawn and hand drawn by a friend of mine in Poland. I spent some time in Poland, mm-hmm. and she drew a picture and gave it to me presented to me on my birthday, on my 26th mm-hmm. birthday. And I've held on to it now. I'm 36 now.
Right, and Ty too.
Yeah, we're the same age. I think we're just about a week and a half apart. Uh-huh. But she gave me the picture, and I, just from divine inspiration, I was like, this is going to be my album cover. And I said that 10 years ago. And
so you got the cover already.
I got the cover. Have the name. Right. Got the subject matter. So
the rest is easy.
The rest is easy. Now I just got to record the rest of it. So yeah, it's in the works. We'll see what happens. I want it to, whatever comes from me. I want it to be real. I want it to be authentic, and I want it to be done in excellence. So if it takes time, it'll take time. Yeah.
Now, Peter, you've sat in with several bands at the festival and as a recipient of the Cascade Blues Association Lifetime Achievement Award and a member of the Oregon Music Hall of Fame, you more than hold your own, obviously. How do you decide who to play with?
Well, there's some bands that I am a regular member of, like Toulouse Cajun Band. I will play with them this year on the Front Porch stage. And Tony Coleman's tribute to the Three Kings. Tony Coleman was B.B. King's drummer for 25 years.
So and Freddie King, Albert King.
Freddie King, Albert BB. King. And that's a fun band for me. That's the material that I kind of grew up in
Chicago
high school.
Blues.
Yeah, that's where I really kind of learned this. Those are my textbooks right there.
And you book all four stages. There's the
two
big stages. There's the front porch you mentioned, a lot of Zydeco Cajun music there, and the crossroads stage, which I think Stan Street helps with.
Yeah, that's right.
Also, the Blues Cruise lineups you book.
Yeah.
That's a lot of logistics to keep straight. Do you get a chance to relax a bit and enjoy the music once the festival starts and appreciate all this work you've done over the year?
Yeah, once it sort of leaves my Excel spreadsheet and hits the park, it's kind of out of my hands in some ways. And then the stage managers and stage crew take over, and they pretty much run the show at that point. And, I settle up with bands that need to be paid in cash and that kind of stuff. I have odds and ends to do, but unless something goes sideways, which we hope doesn't happen, I can kind of just wander around and kind of check up on things and sit in here and just take in a little bit of a performance here and there. But mostly I'm kind of a moving target. I'm pretty much just
You're on call.
I'm on call. I think last year I put about 30,000 steps on my
in one day
or one day. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
That's my year. Well, Peter, I'm so looking forward to the festival this year, and it's the second year back at the waterfront after the little interruption from COVID.
Yeah.
And just always a great crowd, always great music, and a lot of that is because of you and your work.
Well, it's the community of Portland, really, that makes this all work. It's, you know, it's the KBOO partnership.
And you've got many other partners who help out and contribute some financial.
This year,
too.
It's Jeremy Wilson Foundation and Meals on Wheels. You know, we are committed to the community. And this festival has always kind of brought out the best to me. It's always seemed to me has brought out the best in Portland. And I get there on the 4th of
June. We need it, don't we?
Our mission,
downtown.
Yeah, our mission, I feel like our mission now is to bring the city back to life, to help rejuvenate it. And we need that. And it worked last year. I mean, I had a lot of trepidation about whether people would really come back downtown Portland, because some of those people who've been going to the Blues Festival for years, I bet had not been to downtown Portland in 3 years at that point, you know, since before the pandemic hit. But they came, you know, and it was a great thing last year. I mean, I was kind of blown away by the intensity of the performances. It's like everybody who hit the stage had like 3 years of pent up.
Yes, a lot of musicians, performers had nowhere to perform. Over at least 2 years, maybe three.
Yeah, and it was a really magical year last year, I think, just a lot of reasons.
Well, Peter, thanks so much for coming down to KBOO today and previewing the festival with us.
Yeah. I mean, this is like my 30th year, if you can believe that. I mean, talk about career stability. You know, I never would have imagined this was to be a career path at all.
Where would you be if you were a journalist still? Probably writing for the New York Times or Washington Post.
Well, or I probably, like most of my friends in the journalism business, would have had to reinvent myself as something entirely different than a journalist, you know. Maybe I actually would have gone to law school, that was the script.
It would have been the music world's loss.
Anyway.
Well, Peter, Ty, and Rich, again, thanks so much for coming into KBOO today, playing for us and previewing the Waterfront Blues Festival. Can't wait to see you all at the waterfront. Well, that's all for this episode of Jonesy here on KBOO Community Radio. If you missed any part of the show, would like to hear the longer, unexpurgated version, the director's cut, you might call it if we had one, you can listen anytime on demand at kboo.fm/program/Jonesy, Jonesy, or just search for it on the KBOO website. Before we head out the door, a big thank you to our guests today, Waterfront Blues Festival Artistic Director Peter Damon and Ty Curtis and Richard Lawrence of the Ty Curtis Band. And many thanks to SW Concert, host of KBOO's Words and Pictures, who's helping us out in the studio today. The Ty Curtis Band will be performing at the Waterfront Blues Festival on Tuesday, July 4th at 1 p.m. You can find out more about Ty and all his events at tycurtis.net, and you can get all the details on this year's Blues Fest and purchase tickets online at waterfrontbluesfest.com. If you can't be there in person, KBOO will be live streaming the entire run, July 1st through the 4th, from noon to 10 p.m. each day. Jonesy, by the way, comes to you every other week on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Tune in for our next show on Thursday, July 13th at 11 a.m. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying hope to see you all again then.